offer limited Pell grants to federal and state prisoners. What would that mean?
Well, that will transform the meaning of our prison system back to what it was prior to the Clinton crime bill in 1994, which is to say, though we incarcerate you as a fellow citizen or you as a neighbor, we have not ridden off the possibility of your contributions to society permanently.
Max, as we wrap up, how did you end up doing this? We only have 15 seconds.
Oh, dear. Well, I was an undergraduate at Bard College and recognized what's now common, that the investment we made in punishment over a generation was extraordinary, and that educators have a place in fixing these social problems, and they shouldn't wait for the government and the public sector to lead the way.
Max Kenner, founder and executive director of the Bard Prison Initiative. He conceived and created the Bard Prison Initiative as a student volunteer organization when he was an undergraduate at Bard. That does it for our program today. We have a job opening, director of development. You can go to our website, democracynow.org, to get the details and send in your resume. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Robbie Caron. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome again to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, brand new because it's not the same as last week. My name is Jay Koronick, happy to be here with you, along with joining the studio of our WHFR News Director, John Conroy. Hi, John.
Hello, Jay. How you doing?
Welcome. Oh, great fall weather, getting a little chilly out there. Halloween tomorrow, we might talk about that later, or maybe not, because who doesn't know it's Halloween tomorrow? And besides, somebody may be listening to our podcast, and it's not Friday, October 30th, and Halloween is not tomorrow. But anyway, sad news that we want to report, hot off the internet. Brian Whiston, who was the former superintendent of schools here in Dearborn, his son died in a car accident this last Monday. And here's the story from actually from Digital First Media and the Press and Guide website, but it's not in their papers yet. Probably will be this Sunday. Ryan Winston, Brian Winston's son, 32, of Waterford, was killed in a serious injury accident at 7:38 in the morning at the intersection of Highland Road and Pontiac Lake Road. Police said the preliminary investigation revealed that a 20-year-old Waterford man was driving west on Highland Road in a Chevrolet Tahoe when it collided with a Pontiac G6 turning eastbound onto Pontiac Lake Road from eastbound Highland Road. And I'm just adding here that neither one of those is Whiston's car. But the Chevrolet, after hitting the Pontiac, then continued striking a 2013 Dodge Journey that was driven by a 24-year-old Waterford woman that was turning west in there. The driver of the Pontiac Whiston was the driver of the Pontiac, and he was pronounced deceased at the scene. The drivers of the Chevrolet and Dodge were checked by emergency personnel and released at the scene. Investigators determined, and this is the sad part, because his death could have been prevented, probably, determined that Whiston was not wearing his seatbelt at the time of the accident. And just so you know, in case there's rumors, drugs and alcohol are not believed to be a factor in the accident. So that something else happened. Waterford police are still investigating if anybody observed this accident this last Monday. They are to contact the Waterford police. They're still investigating. A lot of tributes, nice tributes from his high school teacher of Ryan Whiston. And he was active in a lot of activities. He was an Eagle Scout. He loved baseball and served as his manager of the varsity baseball team. And everybody said he was a great person, very helpful to all. Of course, Brian Whiston became our state of Michigan superintendent of education since this last July. Just something I wanted to mention, too. Arrangements are pending for the funeral, and the state superintendent's office, Brian Whiston's office, has asked that people, and I'm sure a lot of you listening to this show, did know him personally and knows his personal email, his phone number, but his office has asked that people not email or contact Brian at the moment, as he and his family are going through an extraordinary time of grief. So we're very sorry for this, as we are sorry about any accidental deaths, especially if in any way they could have been prevented. But our sympathies go to Brian Whiston and his family. Okay, moving on. Local news and alternative views. And I guess I'll just try to wrap up some of the newspaper stories from this last week. And it'll be quick. Relatively quick, because there isn't much in the papers. I don't know. Every time a holiday approaches, a major holiday, it seems that there's less news. And it's because people are out of town, or they adjourn their political meetings or whatever before it. So my idea is that we ought to have a holiday every week. There ought to be a major holiday every week, and of course an extra day off. Yes. With pay.
There we go.
Okay. Because it looks like, well, it might put the papers out of business, because then there won't be any news. Nothing will be happening, you know, except tragic accidents, maybe. Well, anyway, last Sunday in the Dearborn Press and Guide, one of the really big story, other than Halloween, or instead of Halloween, it should be the fact that there's an election in many communities across the whole United States next Tuesday, November 3rd. So if you are registered to vote, check and find out what's going to be on the ballot. As I've said in past weeks, there's nothing going on in Dearborn. There is no election, in fact. There's no reason to go to the polls, even though other people in most other cities are, because there's nobody that needs to be elected, and there's no proposals or bond issues or anything going on. Still, if you're a resident of Dearborn, why don't you call friends that you know in other places and encourage them to go vote? Don't forget, just because you're not voting in Dearborn, they're voting a lot of other places. In Dearborn Heights, and the story, I believe, is wrong. I do say this. It is wrong in the Times Herald. The Times Herald this week does say that there's five candidates vying for two council seats. That is wrong. They're vying for three council seats. You got that, folks? There's two incumbents who are up for re-election, but then there's three other candidates. And as I've said for 5 or 6 months now, there's an extra seat there. So one of the three challengers or new candidates, non-incumbents, have a chance to get elected. So it's a big time. You can pick three totally new people in Dearborn Heights if you don't like either one of the incumbents, or you can choose at least one of them, because there's three open seats, not two. So Times Herald, sorry about that. I don't know how you could have got that wrong. They were probably thinking about the two incumbent seats that are open, but there's another seat, and I've known that, and if I'm wrong, I'll say so. But go vote anyway in Dearborn Heights, because, and I can't be wrong, because even the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, it says there's three seats available in Dearborn Heights, okay? So, all right, five candidates for three seats. Your city council controls your business, and three seats is not a majority, but it will sure sway a lot of votes if you're concerned about the direction of city government. But also there's an issue about publishing requirements. And I know that's a little confusing. Where are my papers? I brought my papers in. Yes, I did. Here they are. All right. Here we go. And I don't know why the city council couldn't just decide this. But and by the way, the Press and Guide says there's three open seats. So So there you go. Okay. Voters are being asked to consider a charter amendment, and that's why it has to go to the voters, I guess, regarding the publishing of official notices, things like business in the city. And the ballot question reads, the purpose of this amendment to Dearborn Heights City Charter is to permit any requirement of publishing or publication under the city or the city or the charter or the city's ordinances to be satisfied by publishing the item in a newspaper of general circulation in the city or, and this is the controversy a little bit, by posting the item to the city's website, or by both publishing the item in a newspaper of general circulation in the city and posting the item to the city's website. So the city would decide. Okay, but just posting, the way this amendment reads, posting it on the website would be enough to notify all the people of the city and all the people doing business in the city about whatever, this you know, public notice. I mean, isn't it about sale of property in the area, John? A public notice would be for that reason, and public notice would be for maybe some change in regulations. I'm not sure, but...
No,
You think that's about it?
I think that's the same thing.
Yep. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, same thing. All right, then. So, but I know there was a little controversy when I went to the League of Women Voters debate that we featured on this show 2 weeks ago on October 16th. And you can go back to our podcast and listen to it. That's a debate with all five candidates. Well, not really a debate, but it's a forum. And everybody got to speak, and I think you can understand who's who from the audio recording. Also, the video is on the City of Dearborn Heights website, too. Or they send it to YouTube or some other site. But you just go to their website, and it tells you where to go to view the video they did, which is a nice thing to watch, too, because you can sort of tell from looking at somebody whether or not they're telling the truth or whether or not they're just making something up. Supposedly, if people are not telling the truth, their eyes go to the far right. Did you ever hear that one, John?
Never heard that one.
Yeah, no. If somebody is telling you a lie, their eyes go to their far right. Okay. Or if they don't know what they're talking about, their eyes are roaming at the ceiling.
I was going to say cross-eyed, Jay. But
well, cross-eyed would be a problem, too. Yes, that certainly throws a doubt into what they were saying or their reaction to something. So, video is probably better for these little forums rather than the brief few moments that they get to state their case for the issues. They do talk about it extensively in the press and guide about the publishing requirements thing. It's a little bit of a debate over there, see what you think. Now, if you're living in the Dearborn Heights District 7 school district, and they've got a lot of them over there, there'll be a third question, and it's the asking the voters to consider a $4.6 million technology bond. The bond is requested for 10 years. It would be to update security, technology, and infrastructure. It would average about 2.7 additional mills. The cost to the owner of a house with a taxable value of $60,000 would be an additional $81 annually. And I believe it was already voted down once over there. Oh. And I think there was a special election and it lost. So this is the second time. Doesn't mention in the story here, but a second time. Now, this is sad, though. Dearborn Heights City Clerk Walter Pruzowitz said that voter turnout, this is a November election, folks, is likely be about 18 to 20%. Wow. Is that pathetic or what? That's of registered voters. Wow. And, of course, a majority of people aren't even registered. Adults aren't even registered. So, but they can't vote, so who cares about them? But why would it be so low is because there's no governor election and there's no presidential election this year. That's next year for the president. Is it for the governor, too, next year? I'm trying to think.
I don't know.
Whether okay. Snyder might have another 2 years after that. But anyway, obviously there'll be a bigger turnout next year. But that's terrible, folks. I mean, especially in Dearborn Heights, almost half of your city council is going to be chosen. And you're considering not voting, maybe? And what about those kids in District 7? If they're your kids, you want more building security? You want the best technology and infrastructure, that means, so the roof doesn't fall down or it doesn't leak or, you know, in the building. It's a safety issue, too, that infrastructure thing, you know. So I would think you should go for that. Budgets are such these days of school districts because of cutbacks over the years from state support that they really do. Personal opinion here, and of course, John, all opinions.
Yes, all opinions expressed on this show are strictly our personal views and not the expressed views of HFC or WHFR.
There you go. Well, what I was going to say is that I think it's money well spent. Additional $81 a year for the average home owner. They need this stuff. Your kids are the future. And don't you want to be good to your kids? And even if you don't have kids, don't you want the future remaining to be in good stead? Because there's smart young people out there, because they had the safety, security, and up-to-date technology to really become well-educated and to make good decisions for us in the future. So money well spent there, in my humble opinion. But however you feel, you should go and vote, because if you don't vote for it, it might be voted down. And if you're against it, if you don't vote, then it might be approved. So either way, you need to go and vote.
Yes, and in our Downriver area, we do have some elections as well as millage votes that are very important, one being on Gross Hill regarding road repair and water main fixes. But there are also mayoral races going on in Ecorse and in Riverview.
I've got the printout here. Let's go down the list, and I'll try to be quick. But I've got Allen Park, Ecorse. So listen up, folks, and spread the word if you know people around here who live in these areas. In Allen Park, the mayor and Councilman Hayes, they face off in the mayoral race. So there's one of their councilmen, Dennis Hayes, is running against William Matticus, who is their current mayor. And also there in Allen Park, voters will be asked to choose 6 of 12 candidates to form a new Allen Park City Council. So there you go. Half of the city council is going to be elected by you this time around. Allen Park is also going to offer a second town hall meeting on road millage proposal. So that's going to be on the November 3rd ballot. I think the meeting is already over. Just the story that was done in the News Herald a couple weeks back tells you about that. So you know, helping to fix the roads, if the state won't do it, and we'll talk about that briefly, but there's things that got to be done locally. In fact, there are some roads that are literally just local roads, and if you can't get any sort of shared money or extra money from anywhere else, you got to do it yourself. So that's to be decided there. Ecorse, Councilman is challenging the incumbent in Ecorse mayoral race. So there you go again. Another councilman is running against a mayor. And I think that's because they have name recognition from being on the council. You know, if people haven't heard your name before, it's very hard to get anybody to vote for you. You know, and unless you've got an awful lot of personal friends on Facebook or something. You know, and 12 candidates vie for 6 Ecorse City Council seats. So there's 6 open city council seats. I don't know how many seats are in their council altogether, but that's a lot of open seats. That's okay. And also, their longtime city assessor and treasurer facing challengers on the Ecorse ballot. So they're up. So Ecorse has got a lot on their ballot there. Flat Rock, which is where I went to high school, their incumbent mayor is facing a challenger. Names not given here in this little summary. 5 candidates are running for 3 seats in Flat Rock City Council. So that's a big deal, too.
Well, the Flat Rock mayor is Droplewski.
Yes. Drop, is that how it's pronounced?
Pretty sure it's pronounced
Dropiewski. Dropiewski. Just do it very fast, right? Gibraltar. Gibraltar School District voters are going to decide the fate of a fund for building repairs in the Gibraltar School District. That's all they have on their ballot, but that's still important. The kids are always important. Gross Hill, you were mentioning road water repair millage on the upcoming ballot there, and that's just one proposal.
Two proposals.
One for road repair and one for water repair.
Yep.
Okay. And it's your personal opinion. Oh, you can't endorse because you're sitting here.
No, I can't.
Okay, yeah, okay. Well, you're not running for office, but... No, you could endorse, I think. Because we already said you don't represent HFCC.
No.
So how are you going to vote? If you want to share it, it's a private thing. People don't have to tell, but...
No, I don't mind sharing because as you're going to talk about later, the priority list that we are on from the state and Wayne County, we are pretty low on the list as far as when repairs or when anything's going to be done.
We mentioned that before.
Yes. And so I definitely support what's going to happen.
There's almost no other choice.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. As you see it, of course.
All right.
Lincoln Park, they've got a fire police and fire pension millage proposal. That's important. Got to keep those people well paid, well motivated. Okay, that's my feeling, because those are some of the, in the top five most risky jobs in the United States, major jobs, most risky, police and fire. Melvindale has a councilman challenging the incumbent mayor. The mayor is Stacy Stritz, who actually is an employee at Henry Ford College during the day. So I think it's a... And no disrespect here, a weak mayor system in Melvindale, which means that the city council makes most of the decisions, and the mayor helps to facilitate things, but is not directly involved in new initiatives and planning and so on as much as a so-called strong mayor would be, like in Dearborn Heights or in Dearborn. Most of the mayor situations are the so-called, by political scientists, strong mayor-type local governments. But sometimes in these, and I'm not sure about Melvindale, but in the weak mayor governments, they actually hire a city manager, too. They have a mayor, but the city manager does the day-to-day operations. You know, they're full-time. Mm-hmm. And I know that, well, it's obvious that Stacy, who, again, is here at the college, I believe still, in one of our administrative offices, she's a part-time person.
Huh.
Or she couldn't have this full-time day job here, right? So, but of course, that all city councilmen are part-time, you know. I mean, if they don't have some other job, I guess they could be full-time, but that's their own choice. They're not paid like a full-time person would be paid. So anyway, Stacy Stritz has a challenger from the city council. And eight candidates seek six spots on the Melvindale City Council. So, my goodness, how many candidates are on some of these city councils? If they get eight candidates seeking six spots, wow. So that's really going to make a difference in Melvindale.
Well, certainly make a huge turnover.
Yeah, if it's all the challengers that are voted for. Riverview, again, you've got a mayoral election there. First time in 20 years, you're going to elect a new mayor, okay, because Mayor Tim Durand is stepping down from the office he's held since 95. Wow, 20 years. And a John Price and Andrew Swift have thrown their hats into the ring, and they can't get them out at this point. So somebody might step on those hats, but somebody's going to let them wear their hat in office, I bet, if you vote for them. Three Riverview Council seats up for grabs. Four candidates will be elected. I don't understand that. Three Riverview Council seats are up for grabs. Four candidates will be elected. That's got to be... Three seats are up for re-election, yet four seats will be open. That's because of a city charter amendment requiring a current council member running for mayor to resign from his or her seat prior to election day. So that's how it works out. Huh. Yeah. Southgate. Okay. Rockwood. Yeah, Rockwood is near Flat Rock. We always used to make jokes about Rockwood because we were the real rock. We were the Flat Rock. They were just a rock in the woods, sort of. That's bad. No disrespect there. And they say in the story that was in the News Herald, the headline of that was, "Little Mystery in Rockwood Election. All races are uncontested." Boy, mayor, city clerk, three seats in the city council. Nobody's running against them. I guess they love them. Everybody in Rockwood loves their elected officials. How often does that happen?
No.
Must have everybody loves them. Or nobody has the money to run a campaign against them. Because even these local elections can get expensive for mailings and posters and so on.
And Andrew Swift, if I'm not mistaken, he may be the mayor of Rockwood at the moment, at the present time. And he's running for...
In Riverview.
In Riverview.
Oh.
Yep.
Well,
I'm pretty sure
how that works out. Okay, well, we'll see what happens. It says that Rockwood mayor is Mayor Daniel Guzzi.
Oh, Guzzi. Okay.
He is seeking re-election for his two-year seat. So
Andrew Swift used to be in charge of.
But that's not exactly democracy in action when nobody's running against him.
No.
Somebody should run against him.
We should have other candidates.
Right in the name of somebody, somebody, anybody, actually, none of the above is very popular. Seriously, around the country, it's been known that if you don't like any of the candidates running or the only candidate that's on the ballot, in the write-in, there's always a write-in place on these ballots, although you may have to ask the election officials, how the heck do you do it and where do you do it? But if it's extremely popular, that phrase, you don't have to put like Abraham Lincoln or Superman or whatever. You can actually write the phrase none of the above in. And from the last major election, none of the above was the most popular write-in. Now, somebody's going to go out there and change their name to none of the above.
Right.
Yeah. And middle name of and last name the above, is going to get elected that way. No, not really. Southgate, all candidates running are unopposed. Oh, my gosh. But they've also got a road millage renewal to continue repairs to local streets. So this is not just happening on Grosse Isle and other town we just mentioned, but also in Southgate. And Southgate schools seek voter approval to improve buildings across the district. In Trenton, four candidates vie for three open Trenton City Council seats. So there's a little bit of a horse race there. Familiar faces in Trenton are running unopposed on Election Day. So several residents in the upcoming election so we don't know which offices those are from this little blurb here, but some are unopposed. Not all of them, though. Woodhaven, three candidates are running to fill vacancies on the Woodhaven City Council. Three candidates are going to fill three open four-year terms. Oh, well, that's, again, no contest, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Woodhaven Brownstown superintendent is also... there was a big story about this a couple of months ago. I don't think we did it, though. They have a tax proposal, a school bond, on the Woodhaven ballot. But if you vote for it, there's no tax increase. Okay? It's not playing with light and mirrors. It's actually something they were able to work out. So he hopes everybody approves it because they will actually be able to put more money into the schools. But it won't cost the taxpayers a single penny more. So there you go. So very important, even though not in Dearborn. Hey, if you're not enrolled to vote and you qualify to be in Dearborn, why not spend Tuesday by going down, just symbolically, going down to the city clerk's office at the new Dearborn Administrative Center and enroll to vote. So you'll be all set for next year, okay? Because once you enroll, unless you move, you're set for life. You can vote anytime you want to or decide not to, but just in case you get that urge, and if you're not enrolled, you can't satisfy that urge to do the right thing, of course, in a democracy, is to make a choice. So, voting is not everything because the rest of the time there's stuff to do too. There's meetings to go to and opinions to share with your friends and neighbors about who's doing what to whom and why. But if you're not registered to vote, it seems like that would be the first place you'd start, because you can't follow through on what you believe in at election time if you're not registered. It's just, okay. So get everybody to be registered. Maybe that will be the Dearborn required activity for next Tuesday. Just get people registered anyway, since they don't have to go vote. Get them registered. All right. So moving on. Going back to my paper, and we always talk about things coming up in the next week. This is November 7th. I know, John, you have something on November 7th too. The Detroit Institute of Art has a proposal that they will drive you down to the Institute so you can share the exhibits on November 7th. And the story is on page A13. I probably should find out if there's a cost for the transportation and where the heck you get the transportation from. Okay. There it is.
laying
on top here. Yes, you can hear the pages turn on the air, Ian, because we're still grabbing for them. They're all over. Oh, there's so much news. Okay, here it is. Also for at the Detroit Institute of Art on November 7th, a week from tomorrow, free admission for Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb County residents and DIA members. But that excludes ticketed exhibitions, special shows you'd have to pay for. But and if you're not from those counties, and you have to provide some evidence that you are, of course. It's $12.50 for adults and $8 for seniors ages 62 and above, $6 for ages 6 to 17. But the DIA is a great, great cultural resource, and they have a great little cafe there for lunch if you want to do that. And they have shopping in the marine shop, in the museum shop, it's underwater, the museum shop, you know, holidays coming up. What a great thing to get them a little bit of something that has to do with art. Can't live without art. And there's some joke I could do, but I'm not going to. But anyway, buses leave sites from around the county with convenient parking available at each departure. Round-trip transportation and admission are free, but reservations are required. So to reserve a spot, you need to call the DIA, and their number is 313-833-4005, or you can go to tickets.dia.org. Okay, and the closest location, so there's one in Dearborn Heights, Dearborn Heights City Hall for the DIA bus, Allen Park Community Center, Brownstone Event Center, Heritage Park in Taylor, Hype Athletic Center, Howe Road in Wayne, and the Matrix Center, McNichols Road in Detroit. So in terms of Dearborn Heights City Hall, which is just a little bit west of Telegraph, north of Ford Road, it's on Fenton Street. That would be the closest probably from here. So check that out. That's great fun. Ride down for free. Don't worry about parking. And you get in for free, too.
Yep. That sounds good.
What else is happening on the 7th, John?
Well, besides the 7th, I also have a DIA-related story.
Oh, go ahead, then.
And that is, on Gross Hill, we've had exhibits from the DIA, about 7-8 different recreations of paintings that have been at the Township Hall, at the concert, at the Commons, and Sharkey's, a number of different places. And they've been on display for 2 months. And this is the last weekend that they'll be there. So when you should get a chance to, while you're riding your bike or walking or driving, to come and take a look at these great recreations of paintings of the masters from the DIA.
Mm-hmm. And location, one more time?
Locations are Township Hall,
Gross Hill.
The Gross Hill, the Commons on Gross Hill, the Sharkies and Bishop's Cottage. There's a number.
They're all over.
Yes, all over.
Anywhere you go on Gross Hill, you will stumble over art.
8 or 9 places on Gross Hill, yep.
And that's because art stumbled and fell, and that's why he's still there. That's the joke I was going to do anyway. Oh. Yeah. Sorry. Nope. Had to do it.
Yep.
Bad jokes for me. Museum, our own Dearborn Historical Museum, today, I'm glad we did it on the show. There's a Halloween party at the Dearborn Historical Museum, only from 4 to 6 p.m. today, not tomorrow. I know tomorrow's Halloween. Cost is $2 per child. Adults accompanying children are free. Come dressed in your fun Halloween attire to be a part of the best costume contest. So it's described as a scarily good time by the Dearborn Historical Society, and it's a party. It includes prizes, games, and treats. And if you want more information, you can call the Dearborn Historical Museum. Again, they're located on 915 South Brady Street, the McFadden Ross House. Everybody should know where that is. It's west of Southfield and just past the Andiamo restaurant. And I think there's going to be a new hotel motel on that corner again. I'm not sure. I thought they're giving... it's one of the new businesses in West Dearborn there, but I'm not sure where. There used to be a hotel motel there in that location. They tore it down. I thought they gave the land to the Historical Museum right next to the McFadden Ross House. But that's today from 4 to 6. So if you got the little kid coming home from school, all ages, it says, ghosts and goblins of all ages. Oh, my gosh. $2 per child, however. And if you have a child with you, you're free. But if adults come in and they don't have a child with them, I bet you'll have to pay the $2. Yep. To become part of that party games and get those treats. So that's cute that that's being done. Okay, what else here?
Well, that November 7th that you were speaking of, Jay, we have the Arab American National Museum program that's happening called Wonderful Women in Comics.
Yes.
From 10 to 5. In conjunction also with the Green Brain Comics is having their own Halloween Comic Fest from 11 to 8 Saturday.
Well, that's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow, right.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Yep.
Right, no, and we've mentioned this before. It's called Comic-Con. Now, a lot of these comic book conventions, the sort of abbreviated phrase is Comic-Con, but this is comique, the French word, and it's to imply, in this case, that all of the artists that are being featured at the Arab American Museum, and it doesn't have to do anything with Arab American, but their museum is being rented out. It's a great facility for this comic book convention that honors women artists and, you know, the writers, the drawers, the sketchers, the painters, everything it takes to do either a graphic novel or a comic book. And it's just really great. It's a first, I think, for this area to honor women in this profession. So that's going to be on the 7th, right?
Yep.
Yes,
November 7th.
Right. The same day as the last event we just mentioned. No, last event was the Halloween thing. But okay, well, just I hope you're keeping track of these and writing them down, or just play back the podcast. Okay, straighten it out. The Dearborn Symphony, by the way, and this is a little further on November 13th, so it's 2 weeks from today. They're going to have their day in court, as it's called. They're providing a unique opportunity to go to the Dearborn courthouse without committing an infraction. Ooh, because if you pay the extra money here, and it's not cheap, but it's a great fundraiser for them. It's the annual dinner at the Dearborn courthouse, and the theme is hits from the silver screen. So you get to go to dinner, and you get to go to the concert right after. The dinner's at 6 p.m. in the atrium of the Dearborn 19th District Court, and the concert begins at 8 p.m. And so it's a fantastic meal that they're giving you. Dinner prices range from $85 to $100, depending on the ticket price seat, you know, how close to the stage you're going to be. And they should be purchased by October 30th. Guess what? That's today. That's why I brought that up. See, that's how relevant this show is. Mm-hmm. So you need to contact the Dearborn Symphony. You can go to the Dearborn Symphony website, which is dearbornsymphony.org, or you can call their number. You better do it quick. I think they leave about 2 o'clock on Friday afternoons, 313. So even during this show, I give you permission if you're interested, because I know it's expensive per person, but it's a great benefit. And people really enjoyed it last year, I guess. I saw some pictures of that. Now, concert tickets are, backtrack. Concert, got to read all the way to the end of the story, right, John?
Yes, sir.
Concert tickets are sold separately and will be available for $30 at the door. Okay, so that's $30 on top of the, and so why is it a sliding price? Dinner prices are $85 to $100. Does it depend on the entree?
That would make sense.
That's the only thing I can think of. Or for $85, this is the joke, you only can eat on paper plates, but for $100, they give you chinaware? I don't know. But that's not explained. So you might want to call them right away. At the Dearborn Symphony for this real classy event, in addition to the concert, which is going to be right after. So eat fast and get over to the concert. But the concert tickets are available for $30 at the door because they are sold separately. Okay.
And we should say that the dinner is being held at the atrium of the Dearborn.
I did say
you
that.
Did say that, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Right where people have to go pay tickets and find out if they're going to be found guilty or innocent, and so on. So it's.
But even if you ate it, even if you have a great dinner, you just don't have too far to go to the concert.
No, it's right across the parking lot where you're going to park your car probably anyway. So yep. Okay, all right, got all of that in. Now we got some additional stories here, and only 22 minutes left.
You want to talk about our whiskey bar event?
Yes, of course. And you'll be hearing, and you already have been hearing for the last week, the promotional announcement that we pre-recorded about this. It's our fall 2015 fundraiser. The press release has gone out to the Press and Guide and Times Herald, and hopefully our friends there will not hold a grudge against this show and will be glad to publish this story to also inform people. The place formerly is called, the venue is called, formerly called Halligan's, and they're on West Warren, just past Outer Drive. Okay, technically it's in Detroit, but it's right on the edge there of, I think, Dearborn Heights, perhaps, or maybe Dearborn. I don't know what it is out there. But, and now it's called, though, under new management, Whiskey Bar. Whiskey Bar. And we've got people that are donating their time for us for free that are four of the greatest local blues artist bands that are around here. Now, we always have different artists, and we have these events that Joanne Korchinska, our blues music director, coordinates. And we have so many of these great artists in Detroit, we've never had to repeat anyone. Huh. Even though some of them want to come back because they want to help the station, because we play more local blues than any other station in Detroit, and which includes them. So they want to pay us back. So who's going to be there? The Dale Robertson Band, Danny Croha, who's a fantastic artist, known for this sort of old, authentic, acoustic-type blues, as well as a lot of indie rock. So he's a multi-talented performer. He's going to be doing blues for us, of course. It's a blues concert. Tasha Owens, who won some awards recently as a great blues vocalist in Detroit, and Big Al's Blues Crew is going to be the band playing by themselves and also backing up Tasha Owens, I know. And he's also going to be featuring special guest vocalist Ivory Darnell, who is a wild and crazy blues belter of a singer. And so it's going to be a great night. Starts at 9 o'clock, 21 or over, Saturday, November 7th, just a $5 donation that goes all to WHFR at the door. So we want to see you there, anytime. I mean, 9, 1 o'clock, whatever, there's going to be somebody playing. And if you want to stick it out, they do have, of course, food and beverages for an extra cost. We don't get a cut on that, but it's a nice little venue, and a great time will be had by all. Hope it can include you and your friends. So WHFR Fall Fundraiser at Whiskey Bar, Saturday, November 7th, 9 p.m., $5 donation. Come on down. Okay, now. I've got to go to Jack Lesenberry. I've just got to go to Jack Lesenberry. I know I usually feature one of his commentaries, and I've got four of them now. Boy, is he in trouble now. But that's because earlier in the week, and I think it was on Wednesday, published on the MichiganRadio.org website, published, if you will, this opinion, which was a recorded opinion. And so I'm going to play it now. And in fact, including, it's been a heck of a week for him. He's had four or five strong opinions, including his editorial comment, not editorial, his opinion that's in the current issue of Metro Times. But let's start the battle here by listening to his opinion on charter schools in Michigan.
I'm Jack Lesenberry. Well, the weekend's almost here, and here's a radical idea to consider between football games. I think the time has come to get rid of charter schools. That's right, get rid of them, all of them. Many or most of them don't work, and all of them are draining resources from our conventional public schools and helping further to stabilize education. One thing's beyond doubt. Michigan has proven vastly incompetent at chartering, administering, and overseeing these schools. Yesterday, the U.S. Department of Education turned down the state's request for a $45 million grant to expand charter schools. This was mostly because Michigan doesn't provide sufficient oversight of those who authorize and supposedly oversee them. The Department of Education did the right thing. Nobody should give charter schools in this state another dime. 16 months ago, the Detroit Free Press did a masterful, comprehensive, and eye-opening series on the state of charters here that uncovered horror story after horror story of waste, fraud, and abuse. More importantly, the series revealed that state oversight is incredibly weak, the worst-performing charters are allowed to stay open year after year, and that overall, charter schools have been no better than traditional schools in educating our poorer students. we spend $1 billion tax dollars a year on charter schools. More of this money goes to for-profit private companies than in any other state. After the newspaper stories appeared, the charter school industry issued a series of unconvincing denials. Their fans pointed to a few high-performing, successful charters. But sadly, nothing has changed. Coincidentally, this week, the Wisconsin-based Center for Media and Democracy came out with a new report showing that Washington has paid at least $1.7 million to proposed Michigan charter schools that never opened. Lisa Graves, the center's executive director, said, "The money hasn't been paid back. There's no real accounting for how it was spent. I think that's a problem." No kidding. Stephen Henderson, editor of the Detroit Free Press editorial page, says he's enrolled his children, quote, "in one of the few high-performing charters in Detroit." Well, of course, he was able to do that since he's both highly educated and well-connected. However, most people are neither. Henderson also tells the story of the pompously named Aisha Shule W.E.B. Du Bois Preparatory Academy, which opened 2 years ago and shut down after 6 weeks. The irony is that this particular charter was authorized by the Detroit Public Schools, themselves a poster child for fiscal and academic failure. So, if we did get rid of the charters, what should we do instead? The answer is simple and incredibly complex. Commit ourselves as a state and the people to fixing public education. This won't be easy. It will cost money and require something more than money, really doing what it takes to educate as many kids as possible to as full an extent as possible. It will require flexibility. What works in Ann Arbor may not in Detroit. Schools in some places will have to become community centers. Parents and guardians will need educating too. Doing this will be hard and may not always succeed. Not doing it means condemning our state and our kids to a future of failure, which means we really don't have any choice.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
So when Jack came out with that opinion, and it is my personal opinion too, yep, as an educator in public schools for 48 years, it's crazy. It's really, if you want to send your child to a private school and pay the extra money, that is your, I don't know, constitutional right or something like that. But to actually turn over public education to charter schools is wrong in so many ways, and Jack Lessenberry has expressed some of those for you. The Metro Times, which is a free publication in Detroit, this week, so last Wednesday's edition comes out on Wednesday every week, has a major investigative report, and I printed it out and had to reduce the type so it would fit on 8 pages. But it's probably a 3,000 to 5,000 word long article about how charter schools are going to illegal mentions of, they're calling it smoke, mirrors, and bullying to keep their staff from unionizing. Because, of course, they wouldn't make the profit. See, a charter school, folks, don't forget, they are a for-profit institution. Public schools are not making a profit. They're just trying to break even. But if you're trying to make a profit, that means you have to make more money somehow than what could be going into the education of the students. Mm-hmm. And so this expose from an Ali Gross in Metro Times this week, it's beautiful. It's a wonderful in-depth an investigative report on this particular problem. There's many problems with charter schools, and Lessenberry summarized many of them, in my opinion. But this is another practice that has been going on just because, hey, they want to make an extra buck or two or ten or thousands or whatever on our kids' back. And that's my opinion. But, of course, the Michigan Education Digest, doesn't that sound impressive? It's actually from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, which is the conservative think tank, and you always know what they're going to say. Well, they love charter schools, okay? And by the way, Lessenberry this week does have another editorial just on the subject of the Education Achievement Authority, which the legislature and Governor Engler is sort of forced upon the schools to take away educational decisions from educators and elected representatives, and put it in the hands of businessmen, local businessmen. And it's reported here, and to their credit, by the Mackinac Center, that the future of EAA is uncertain under the new proposed DPS plan that the governor has put in place. Well, that would be good. Again, Lessenberry's got this whole editorial opinion this week that's totally against not only the charter schools, but another one. It says time to end the EAA. The only problem is, as he said, it looks like the legislature won't go for Governor Snyder's plan. They didn't go for his plan to fix the highways that he proposed first 3 years ago. And it looks like they're not going to go for his proposed Detroit public school plan. Why? Because they're going to cover a lot of the debt of Detroit public schools. That's part of the plan. But getting rid of the AA, I think, would be a good thing, too. Well, anyway, they have criticized Jack Lessenberry in several ways. Apparently, they agree that there's problems with some of them, but they point out that a few charter schools are success stories. Yeah, but a few? Come on. It means that the experiment has failed. And just because there's a few that work, it's taking resources away, in my humble opinion, from the public schools. Then Lessenberry talked about the how the state has been incompetent at overseeing the charters. Many schools, they say many schools in conventional districts also have failed academically. Certainly true. But, of course, if full resources are not going to those schools, can you totally blame the public schools? And what about the funding? Remember, the state of Michigan hacked the budget to public school funding. They're the ones that fund public schools, local schools in Michigan, you know. That's been true from 1993, when John Engler changed this funding system. And so, if you want to blame someone, you could blame even the state of Michigan for the horrible state of public schools, as well as the horrible state of charter schools. So that's my rebuttal to them. Also, they say Stephen Henderson, who is the in charge of the editorial page in the Free Press, he enrolled his children in one of the few high-performing charters in Detroit. And Lessenberry's comment was, well, of course, he was able to do that since he's both highly educated and well-connected. And I should say, he's got enough money to afford that special option. He says, however, most people are neither. A close look says, as many charter school opponents Lessenberry asserts that they don't serve low-income students. It's false. They do. Evidence abounds that charter schools are giving children in poverty a better education. I think to say evidence abounds is an overstatement on their part, but there are always examples of exceptions to every rule, right? And they say Lessenberry said fans of charter schools point to a few high-performing charters, but nothing has changed. And it seems that there's a Stanford University Center for Research on Education Outcomes saying that the city of Detroit's charter schools should serve as a model of success for other communities. And what I say, even though they say that this organization's reports have been recognized by even the U.S. Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, but I say, how did Stanford University get to Detroit? And who did they send? What people? What were their backgrounds? Because the city of Detroit is doing horribly. And are they comparing the charter schools to the public schools that have been set adrift under emergency financial management by the state of Michigan for years now? We're in our fifth emergency financial manager, I believe, fourth or fifth, with no hope in sight until maybe Governor Snyder's plan to come up with a totally new plan and also bail him out for $200 million might help get him back on the road. And, of course, Lessenberry said it's not going to be easy. If we don't have charter schools, we've got to fix the public schools, and it's not going to be easy. Never is. The Mackinac Center has said that, we've already tried with the public schools and that hasn't worked. And so, like Benton Harbor in Detroit said, parents have a choice because charter schools are thriving and produce. Yeah, but, I agree with Jack Lessenberry. By the way, I'm just finishing this up, but you should become part of the argument, and let's really make some significant change. Why go along with the way it is when things have been proven to not be the best way to do it? Okay, I think then change has got to happen, and don't be afraid of it. Let's make it happen, and let's, you know, tweak it and make it better then. Jack also this week, it's his final comment on his opinions, he's also said, time to take over the Ambassador Bridge. Get it away from Matty Maroon. I'm not sure how he's going to do that. It's privately owned. But the bridge is falling apart, and Maroon wants to add a couple more lanes to the sides or something while the basic structure falls apart, 90 years old or more, I think. And Canada has already complained about the disrepair of the bridge falling on homes over there on the Canadian side. So I don't know what you can do with private ownership of the bridge, but they certainly shouldn't allow Maroon to add another bridge or add on to the sides of a bridge that's already falling apart. Canada won't give him more land or permission to add more anyway, because they hate him, because he fought the second bridge that they were in favor of, that they're paying for now. And we can't, you know, hopefully that bridge will be finished sooner rather than later, a couple of years from now. You got some final things, John?
Real quick. Yes.
Wait a minute. Okay. Let's get your mic on. Full volume. Go.
There we go. I just want to put a quick plug in for tonight's performance at Joe's Top Dog in Dearborn. Paul Vornhagen is going to be the guest soloist with the Rich Michaels Trio. This goes from 7 to 9:30 at Joe's Top Dog, Coney Island. Every Friday, jazz programs. Very, very, very fine setup.
And it's part of our total concert calendar. We love supporting local artists, and Paul Vornhagen, again, is a great Ann Arbor-based jazz saxophonist, and I think he's caliber of Stan Getz. Of course, Stan Getz was one of the greats, but you know, here's a chance in Dearborn to have great live entertainment, and this is not a plug for Joe's Top Dog, but Dog, except to say thank you for any to any venue that's helping to support local live local artists.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
that's true. And then we have a Fall Festival of the Arts this weekend, or no, I'm sorry, November 6th through the 8th at the James DeSena Center for Arts and Culture in Wyandotte. There'll be an opening reception and program on 6 p.m. November 6th at the center at 81 Chestnut. There's no charge to attend this reception or festival, and there'll be demonstrations by member artists throughout the weekend. Hors d'oeuvres and wine will be served at that reception. Come one and come all.
Okay. Boy, so much to do here. Boy.
Lots of great things going on.
Yeah. Jay. Okay. And I'll just got a couple stories here to conclude with, and John is going to be leaving us to assist Joanne Korchinska on our way in for our Highway 61 show here, starting, we hope, in about 3 to 4 minutes, but when she gets here, and then things will be great. In fact, if she is delayed a couple minutes, I might start with a Zydeco tune. Ha, 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 ha. She loves Zydeco. Well, not as much as I do, but anyway. Since I'm a producer, I got the right to do that, I think. But we'll get that started in a little while, of course. We're having a big event, mostly for students, but it's students from all over the area, college students, from, of course, Henry Ford College and Wayne State University, University of Michigan Dearborn, Schoolcraft in Livonia, Monroe Community College, and Oakland Community College are coming on down here to the Administrative Services and Conference Center on our main campus here of Henry Ford College next Friday, November 6th. Next Friday, November 6th, from 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Henry Ford College, along with the League of Women Voters of Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, are going to host the 12th Annual Michigan Student Political Issues Convention. And we're going to have both Debbies here, supposedly, U.S. Representative Debbie Dingell and Debbie Stabenow, our senator, one of our two senators, are going to be there, as well as local Michigan Senator Morris Hood is going to moderate a panel of elected officials in midday in that building. And, let's see, Debbie Dingell starting the day at 9 a.m. and Debbie Stabenow is ending the day at 2 p.m. So you go from Debbie to Debbie. That's really great. And a lot of people have been invited, elected representatives who may turn up if nothing's happening in Lansing, for example. Oh, yes, the road bill, it failed. That terrible effort that Republicans came up with did fail in the Senate. So it didn't even get to Governor Snyder, who has already said that taking $600 million away from social services in Michigan, he's not in favor of that. He's already said that. That was part of the terrible, convoluted plan. And Lessenberry railed against that 2 days ago also in one of his opinions. I mean, you know, if you know something's bad, you need to say how bad it is. You can't just play namby-pamby. That's what I think. Okay? I mean, if it's really outrageously bad and its time is well past, or it should never get close to being passed, if it's a bill or something, then you need to state your position very strongly. So I suspect that maybe Representative George Durrani and Senator David Kinesic from this area will be at this conference too. Now, people from the public, general public, can come in too. You can attend the presentations and the lecture, but it's for students to get students involved. But that's fine. Anyone can come in. You do register right there in the Forfa Auditorium in the ASCC building, main campus, Henry Ford College. You can start registering at 8 a.m. next Friday. And but the whole day is free and open to the public. Interestingly, they do say proper business attire is required. So there. Okay. But that's a great thing to do, and we accommodate a lot of students from all over because they can actually give feedback and talk to and try to understand what our elected politicians are doing and what they're all about. More involvement from our young people is what we're looking for because they are the future, right? And they need to be in touch. It's about 2 o'clock now, and I need to tell you that you're listening to WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves. Our website is whfr.fm. Tomorrow is the last day to order. This is news from City of Dearborn, their newsletter, which just went out as an email 2 days ago, yesterday, that tomorrow is the last day to order the free 2016 City of Dearborn calendar. And you can also order it by calling the number 943-313-943-3003. Calendars will be mailed by December 30th. So you may not get it by January 1st. So save that last calendar. But they're nice to have because they tell you when to put the trash out and other special city events, and they're free if you're a Dearborn resident. Dearborn has been selected as a 5-star city for economic development for the 5th year in a row, one of just 19 communities across the state of Michigan to receive the 5-star, which is the highest designation. Study was done by University of Michigan Dearborn Center for Innovation Research. Yeah, they better name us because they're sitting here right in the middle of Dearborn themselves, so, right? Anyway, they were selected as a 5-star community because we spent more than $3.4 million on economic development and had more than $31 million in additions to assets in the past year and more than $29 billion in combined real and personal value, personal property values. So it's a combination of those factors. But okay, I guess that's all good. Loose leaf collection has begun in Dearborn, and it's a little complicated, so you need to go to cityofdearborn.org website, follow all the rules there. The basic principle is they're only going to come twice to